You're listening to the Daily Radio Ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Proverbs. And now here's Pastor Sandy in the book of Proverbs chapter 25 with today's edition of Sandy Adams Radio.
Over the years, mankind's knowledge has grown astronomically. In fact, if history's greatest intellectuals return to earth today, people like Aristotle and Augustine and Galileo and Newton, they probably couldn't pass a high school equivalency exam. The body of knowledge has increased that much. And yet, is the world a better place? Is it a better place to live? Probably not. Today, problems abound. In fact, modern scientific knowledge threatens to wipe us out. That's why our greatest need today is not more knowledge, but wisdom. We need the ability to take the facts that we know and use them for our benefit, not our detriment. You know, knowledge is always expanding, but wisdom can never be improved upon. Real wisdom stands the test of time. It doesn't become obsolete or outdated. God's wisdom is always relevant, and it's needed by every new generation. Chapter 25 begins with an editorial comment that was added to the Proverbs about 250 years after Solomon wrote them. It reads, "These also are Proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied. 2.5 centuries after Solomon's death, his wisdom had not become tarnished, nor had it become old-fashioned. Young men were still seeking his insights. They were still copying his pearls of wisdom. Solomon's wisdom was God's wisdom, and God's wisdom is always in demand." Verse 2 tells us, "It is the glory of God to conceal a matter, but the glory of kings is to search out a matter." You know, the knowledge of God is such a vast subject. God can never be fully comprehended by the mind of man. Isaiah 55 is one of my favorite chapters. It tells us that his ways, his thoughts, are not our thoughts. They're higher than ours. It's the infinity and it's the mystery of God that add to his glory in the eyes of mortal men. And yet there are truths about God that he has made known. And thus it's the glory of man to seek out and to ascertain God's revelation. I love how St. Gregory sort of sums it up. He says, "I love God because I know him. I adore God because I cannot comprehend him." A relationship with God is a mixture of the known and the unknowable. Verse 3, "As the heavens for height and the earth for depth, so the heart of kings is unsearchable." You know, it is both President Obama's blessing and his blight to be privy to classified information that his constituency lacks. And when he has to act on information only known to him, oh boy, it becomes open to everyone's criticism. If only they knew the whole story. You know, from our vantage point, the heart of the king is unsearchable. He sees things that we don't see. And I'll tell you, this is also the pastor's dilemma. You know, the pastor has some behind-the-scenes information that you don't possess and that he can't tell you. If I told you, I'd have to kill you. And that's why a congregation bent on judging him can easily misinterpret his actions and can find plenty of reason to be critical. Wisdom, though, gives leaders the benefit of the doubt. Always remember, there's more to it than what meets the eye. Well, he says, "Take away the dross from silver, and it will go to the silversmith for jewelry. Take away the wicked from before the king, and his throne will be established in righteousness." He's saying that just as impurities will ruin the value of a piece of silver, an evil counselor or an unloyal assistant will bring down a leader. He says, "Do not exalt yourself in the presence of the king, and do not stand in the place of the great. For it is better that he say to you, 'Come up here,' than that you should be put lower in the presence of the prince whom your eyes have seen." Perhaps this was inspiration for Jesus' parable in Luke chapter 14. You remember the similarities there? I think the point is that God likes to turn the tables. He likes to send the haughty to the end of the line, and he likes to send the humble to the head of the class. Remember the advice that Jeremiah gave to his servant Baruch. I think about this a lot. In Jeremiah 45, verse 5, he said, "Do you seek great things for yourself?" And then he answers his own question. Do not seek them. I hope you notice there, it's not ambition that's a sin. Ambition is a good thing. God wants us to seek great things, just not for ourselves. Be ambitious for the fame of God and for the salvation of others. In one of his plays, William Shakespeare writes, "Cromwell, I charge thee, fling away ambitions. By that sin fell the angels. How can man then, the image of his maker, hope to profit by it?" Well, verse 8 tells us, "Do not go hastily to court, for what will you do in the end when your neighbor has put you to shame?" What if you rush to court and then lose your case? Better to work it out ahead of time. He says, "Debate your case with your neighbor and do not disclose the secret to another, lest he who hears it expose your shame and your reputation be ruined." Always best to come to an agreement, settle things out of court if you can. Verse 11, "A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver." I like that. The right word spoke the right way at the right time has a dynamic impact for good. That's why we should choose our words wisely. We should be strategic. Did you know words are powerful things? And so we should speak carefully. "Like an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold is a wise rebuker to an obedient ear." A rebuke received is like a beautiful piece of jewelry. I mean, the one who rebukes shows the courage to love. The one who receives demonstrates the courage to listen. And when you combine the rebuke and the reception, it's a beautiful thing. He says, "Like the cold of snow in time of harvest is a faithful messenger to those who send him, for he refreshes the soul of his masters." You know, harvest time in Israel is hot. And once the crop was in the barns, often the Galilean farmers, they would retreat up to the snow-capped peaks up in Mount Hermon to cool off. Solomon, in fact, had a summer palace there in the shadows of Mount Hermon. You know, in 1969, the Israelis, they opened a ski resort there on the top of Mount Hermon. There in Israel today. You didn't know there was a ski resort in Israel, did you? A faithful messenger or a Bible teacher, Solomon is saying, is like a blast of cold wind on a sweltering hot day. When you bring the truth, it refreshes the sender and the recipients both. He says, "Whoever falsely boasts of giving is like clouds and wind without rain." Boy, in light of all that God has done for us, any bragging from us about what we have done for God, about how much we're doing or giving to God, just like hot air, that's all it is. It's like clouds without rain. You've got no room to boast. Verse 15, "By long forbearance, a ruler is persuaded, and a gentle tongue breaks a bone." Not the breaking a bone part, but the fact that a gentle tongue is valued. You know, perseverance can be very, very persuasive. Stick to it, man. Stay at it. It can be very persuasive, especially when it's coupled with gentleness and politeness. Now, here's the verse that I've been applying to a personal struggle that I've been enduring currently. Many of you know that we've been going back and forth with the Barrow County Commission. We're trying to get some zoning issues straightened up so we can go ahead with our new building up at Calvary 316. And we've been going back and forth and back and forth. As a matter of fact, this verse saved me this past week because I had all but decided I was going to storm the next commission meeting up there and I was going to use the public comments section of the meeting to stand up and voice my objections and kind of rail on the Board of Commissioners as to why they're dragging their feet and causing us such a hard time and how they need to get on the stick and give us an answer to our questions. And I had it all laid out, man. I was going to persevere in this thing. I was going to bombard them. I was going to stay at it. They were going to wish that I would just go away. I mean, that was my plan until I read this verse. You know, that long forbearance part I had down. But then he adds a gentle tongue to to that long forbearance. And that's important. You know, you can sabotage your persistence by getting pushy, by becoming demanding. It's the combination of perseverance and politeness that becomes powerfully persuasive. You know, in so many arenas of life, a polite perseverance is the key. I read this past week where a radish seed takes 3 days to grow into a radish, while a wildflower seed takes 2 years to germinate, then 2 years to sprout, then another 2 years to flower. So, do you want to be an ugly radish? That can happen quick. Or do you want to be a beautiful wildflower? Then you need to persevere. Hey, two frogs fell into a can of cream, or so I've heard it told. The sides of the can were shiny and steep, and the cream was deep and cold. Oh, what's the use, croaked number one. 'Tis fate, no help's around. Goodbye, my friend. Goodbye, cruel world. And weeping still, he drowned. But number two, made of sterner stuff, dog paddled in surprise. All the while he wiped his creamy face and he dried his creamy eyes. I'll swim a while at least, he said, or so I've heard he said. It really wouldn't help the world if one more frog were dead. An hour or two he kicked and swam, and not once he stopped to mutter, but kicked and kicked and swam and kicked, then hopped out via butter. Persevere. Verse 16. Have you found honey? Eat only as much as you need, lest you be filled with it and vomit. That's great. In other words, don't OD on honey. You know, here's the lesson. Most everything in moderation is good. When we become gluttonous, when we go to the extreme, then we get into trouble. Seldom set foot in your neighbor's house, lest he become weary of you and hate you. If you always show up at your neighbor's house around dinner time, he's going to get tired of you quick. Don't wear out your welcome, he's saying. When you notice your host has already brushed his teeth and changed into his pajamas, it's probably time for you to leave and go home. It's been said short-term visits make for long-term friends. Verse 18, a man who bears false witness, literally lies, against his neighbor is like a club, a sword, and a sharp arrow. Confidence in an unfaithful man in time of trouble is like a bad tooth and a foot out of joint. In other words, it's eventually, confidence in an unfaithful man in a time, he's eventually going to let you down. You know that. It's only a matter of time. Just like a rotten tooth. You know, you can get by with a rotten tooth for a little while, but it's only a matter of time. You're going to have to deal with the problem. It's going to be painful. Like one who takes away a garment in cold weather, and like vinegar on soda is one who sings songs to a heavy heart. In other words, don't try to sugarcoat someone else's sorrow. You know, you hear that a lot. You know, someone's hurting and we come in with glib words and sort of callous cries. Oh, cheer up, man, cheer up. What's wrong with you? No, there's a time when we need to weep with those who weep. Verse 21, if your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat. And if he is thirsty, give him water to drink. For so you will heap coals of fire on his head and the Lord will reward you. In other words, be nice to your enemy while he's trying to be hostile to you, and it's like heaping hot coals on his head. You torture your enemy and you gain God's favor at the same time. Good deal. He says, the north wind brings forth rain, and a backbiting tongue, an angry countenance. Verse 24, it is better to dwell in a corner of a housetop than in a house shared with a contentious woman. Now, instead of fleeing to the housetop, some men choose to escape an obnoxious wife by going to their garage or their shop, or they just stay at the office after hours, or they like the bowling alley, or they get a boat and take up fishing, or they go to the golf course and play a round of golf. Hey, you know what, tonight, I'm just going to tell you the truth. Here it is. To her who has ears to hear, ladies, if your husband lives in the corner of the housetop or at the bowling alley or at the golf course or still at work, rather than pester him and complain to him that he's never home, you might want to ask yourself what you're doing to keep him away. Trust me, if he was appreciated and if he was respected at home, he would probably rush to be there. Now that's just telling it to you straight. A cold water to a weary soul, so is good news from a far country. Good news is like cold water on a hot summer day. I like that. You know, the word gospel means good news. And yet, why is it that we think of sharing Jesus with friends and strangers, we think of that and we think we'll be rejected. We just assume we'll be rejected, that we'll run into a wall, that we'll be resisted. I mean, think about it. What thirsty person is going to turn down a glass of cold water? And yet that's what the gospel is, he's saying. It's like a cold water to a weary soul. It's something people are looking for. It's something people desire. They're thirsty for the gospel. Once I was, I picked up a hitchhiker not far from where he wanted to go, and he was in my car. He was only in the car maybe 5 minutes, just long enough for me to explain to him the basic truths of salvation. And as he was getting out of the car, I asked him, I said, "Hey, how would you like to give your life to Jesus?" And he said, "Yeah, I think I would." And I had this idea, you know, this assumption that, you know, the gospel's just not that, doesn't just happen that way. You know, people resist it and they work through it. And, you know, you can't possibly just be wanting a glass of cold water on a hot day. But so I'm thinking this is too easy. And so I'm thinking I must have left something out. And so I go back through it, you know, and then I ask him, I said, "Now, are you sure? Do you want to give your life to Jesus?" He says, "Yeah, I'd really like to." And I'm thinking, it just can't work this way. And so once again, I go through it and I explain it to him. And I say, "Now, do you really want to give your life to Jesus?" And I'll never forget, the kid looks at me and he says, "Well, hell yeah." I said, well, enough said. Apparently you want to give your life to Jesus, man. I led him in a sinner's prayer and he came to know the Lord. It was great. He was ready. Hey, remember verse 25. You know, as cold water to a weary soul, so is good news from a far country. Jesus is just what your friends are looking for. Don't forget it. A righteous man who falters before the wicked is like a murky spring and a polluted well. You know, when we stumble, when we compromise our faith, we muddy the water for the non-Christians that are looking at our lives. You know, hypocrisy becomes a huge turnoff to an unbelieving world. It's not the gospel they're turned off to. That's good news. They're turned off to our hypocrisy. Verse 27, "It is not good to eat much honey, so to seek one's own glory is not glory." It's disgraceful for someone to live for their own fame, he's saying. Verse 28, "Whoever has no rule over his own spirit is like a city broken down without walls." The man who lacks self-discipline, who cannot control himself, will be controlled by other people or other things. The enemy will just run wild over his life. Satan will ruin everything that's good and wholesome in this man. An undisciplined man has no protection against evil influences. He's like a crippled deer in the middle of a pack of bobcats. Chapter 26. "As snow in summer and rain in harvest, so honor is not fitting for a fool." Doesn't snow in the summertime. It just doesn't happen. Doesn't snow much in Georgia in July or August. Doesn't happen. And neither does a fool gain honor. He says, "Like a flitting sparrow, like a flying swallow, so a curse without cause shall not alight." You know, the occultist, the voodoo practitioner, can curse the Christian until they're blue in the face, but the curse will not stick. It's powerless. It cannot land on a believer. God prevents it from coming to pass. God protects his children from these satanic curses. I remember that every time I go down to Haiti. Yeah, that's a very real threat. "But like a flitting sparrow, like a flying swallow, so a curse without cause shall not alight." He says, "A whip for the horse, a bridle for the donkey, and a rod for the fool's back." You can't reason with a fool. They learn the hard way. They have to be punished. He says, "Do not answer a fool according to his folly, lest you also be like him. Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. In other words, there's a right way and a wrong way to answer a fool. Avoid getting into it with him. Avoid the circular reasonings and the silly and the hypothetical arguments. You know, when you're arguing with the fool, don't deal with the abstract. Get practical, stay biblical, and then you'll expose his foolishness. But if you get into it with him on his terms, then it just go round and round and round. You remember the Pharisees when they came to Jesus in the temple? You know, they tried to trick him with all kinds of hypothetical questions. And Jesus kept bringing them back to Scripture. He answered them with Scripture. That's how you answer a fool. Verse 6, he who sends a message by the hand of a fool cuts off his own feet and drinks violence. When you send out a representative, make sure he's not a fool. You don't want to be represented by a fool. You let that happen, you shoot yourself in the foot. You undermine your own message. He says, like the legs of the lame that hang limp is a proverb in the mouth of fools. Nobody will listen to a wise word that's spoken from the lips of a fool. You know, it can be wise, but if it's spoken by a fool, you know, it's a message with no legs in a sense. It doesn't go anywhere. Nobody listens to it. It just lays limp. Like one who binds a stone in a sling is he who gives honor to a fool. Like a thorn that goes into the hand of a drunkard is a proverb in the mouth of fools. The great God who formed everything gives the fool his hire and the transgressor his wages. As a dog returns to his own vomit, so a fool repeats his folly. You recognize that verse? It gets quoted in 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 22. The person who repents and comes to Jesus and then goes back to his sinful ways later on, like the dog returning to his vomit. Verse 12, do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There is more hope for a fool than for him. Oh boy, you know, a wise man who only sees himself through his own eyes, from his own perspective, is worse off than a foolish man. Do you have some objectivity in your life? Do you see yourself for who you are? I mean, warts and all. Are you honest with your frailties and your mistakes and your weaknesses? If not, get married. Or wise up, one of the two. We shouldn't be foolish, and we should learn to see ourselves objectively. Verse 13, the lazy man says, there is a lion in the road. A fierce lion is in the streets. I can't go to work this morning. I need to sleep in. There's no lion in the street. You're lying, man. You're just lazy. You're just looking for excuses not to go to work. That's a lazy man. As a door turns on its hinges, so does the lazy man on his bed. I think I've got a picture for this. I mean, she hears the alarm and she just rolls over like a door turning on its hinges. The lazy man buries his hand in the bowl. It wearies him to bring it back to his mouth. This is so funny to me. He's got a bowl full of food, but he's hungry because he's too lazy to pick up the spoon and bring the food to his mouth. The lazy man is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who can answer sensibly. He's so proud he thinks he knows more than seven men. Verse 17 is a great verse. Pay attention to this verse. It'll save you a lot of trouble. He who passes by and meddles in a quarrel not his own is like one who takes a dog by the ears. That's a great proverb.
Thanks for joining us today on Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams. Pastor Sandy is continuing in the book of Proverbs. Pastor Sandy is the senior pastor of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia, where he brings you messages from the Bible, book by book and verse by verse. We know that life can be challenging. That's why we want you to know that you don't have to go through it alone. If you have questions about Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain, or if you are in need of prayer, please call us. Our phone number is 770-736-2828. Again, that's 770-736-2828. We would love to hear from you. The book of Proverbs doesn't leave you wondering what it's all about. Early in the first chapter, Solomon writes, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." It's clear that we should learn as much as possible from God's Word. To understand more about this radio ministry, head over to sandyadams.org. While you're there, check out Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain under the About tab. We invite you to join us this Sunday. We have services at 9:15 and 11:15 a.m. More details can be found online at sandyadams.org. Well, that's all the time we have for today, but we'll catch up with you next time on Sandy Adams Radio.